RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Audio problems all fixed, Val.
And Beans. Yes, we've had such an entertaining morning thus far.
So we're a half hour behind.
We're a half an hour behind. It's very frustrating to me. It's a Monday. Monday.
It was a great weekend, though, and I didn't have to go very far to enjoy it. The weather was beautiful. Everybody was having a good time. How about you, Tracy?
What a great weekend.
Good.
Busy. Working on a story that I hope to get out today.
Working on a story.
Yeah. It's about, see, what I've noticed is that a lot of people don't know the difference between Guccifer and Guccifer 2.
Guccifer.
And Guccifer 2. Do you know the difference between them two? Because not a lot of people do.
Well, I know that Guccifer 2 was a made-up fraud. That's the most I can say definitively, because the first Guccifer wouldn't go along with the plan. So they had to make something. It's pretty much that it was all made up. You have been the person that has put that whole timeline, that whole thing into perspective best. So I'll just leave it to you to refresh my and everybody else's memory.
I only ask you that because I think that I'm the only weirdo that knows all this stuff. Really? Like, I feel like there's not a lot of people that have the time to learn this crap. It's just too much. So I ask you because I think that you having an actual life are like representative of most people. And if you know something, I assume that most people do.
Well, I just gave you the crumbs that I do know.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I know enough to know I'm not putting too much of my attention into the validity of this whole Guccifer 2 thing, because that has been a card that has been played by the perpetrators of the coup. So if they're playing the card, obviously it's nonsense. But it's good to know why it's nonsense.
Well, listen, there was another one. There was an original Guccifer, or as he likes to be called, Guccifer, from 2013 to 2014. He was named Marcel Lazar. He was Romanian. And he is the one who hacked into Sidney Blumenthal and found the emails to Hillary Clinton, which actually proved that she was using a homebrew server. Mm. So this was an actual guy in Romania who hacked into the accounts of, goodness knows how many people, lots of high profile FBI folks, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, Hillary Clinton's, there's a little bit of contention there, but Sidney Blumenthal, the Bush family, all of them. The way he did it was a little interesting. It wasn't like most hackers. So supposedly, as per some reporting and some other things, this guy was not some sophisticated hacker like you'd expect. What he did was he guessed the answers to the password protection questions.
Oh, are we talking about Podesta now?
No. This is in 13 and 14, way before Podesta came about. That's what I'm saying. See, most people don't know the story, and it's really important. So I'm going to tell it to you as best as I can now and just expect that either later today, if I can finish it, or tomorrow, you guys will get the details of why this makes it so blockbuster, because it is. So this guy, way before Podesta was hacked or phished, way before the DNC leaks, 2013-2014, was a hacker from Romania who hid himself behind a Russian proxy server. So he would appear as though he was Russian. Sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. And what he did basically was he would let's say he got someone's account at AOL, like blah, blah, blah at AOL.com, Colin Powell at AOL.com, Colin Powell at Yahoo.com. He would study the connections of these people's lives and their public information that was publicly available to them. And he would guess the answers to the questions that they answered to protect their password resets. So like, you know, when you go to reset your password on the internet, they're like, answer these three security questions. What was your mother's maiden name? What was your first pet's name? What, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. My first pet's name was Rosie.
Well, now everybody will be able to get into your email. So the way this guy did it was not by like placing malware on people's computers and sending phishing emails. He just studied the people that he wanted, guessed the answers to their security questions, reset their passwords. And then when he got into their accounts, he would export their address books so that he would have all of the other accounts that he would possibly ever want in their email addresses. And he'd just rinse and repeat.
Wow, this guy was good.
He was good. He did this for like a year and a half. And he, again, got into Sidney Blumenthal's email and then started leaking some documents about Benghazi.
Mm.
So eventually they caught up with him and they found him. And he was thrown in a Romanian prison for his crimes in Romania because he hacked some Romanian politicians. He exposed an affair between Colin Powell and a Romanian official. All kinds of stuff. And again, the what's it called? The Blumenthal stuff. And Cody Scher was involved there, too. See, names sound familiar, Frank?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. So he got thrown in jail and he was over in Romania. And then all of a sudden, it appears out of almost nowhere, in the midst of the ongoing mid-year exam investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server, the United States and the FBI and U.S. attorneys extradite Guccifer from Romanian prison to the United States so that he can stand trial here. But he doesn't stand trial. He cops a plea deal. So as this is all going on, I had this up and I was, now it's gone. I'm going to find it again while I'm talking. As this is all going on, there's a very familiar name leading this investigation. And at the time, they had done like an interview, a media had done an interview with Guccifer overseas, and they held on to it and sat on this interview for months before they released it. They had interviewed him in, I think, April 2016 and didn't release the interviews until May of 2016. May of 2016 is the same month where we had the Caputo story about WikiLeaks having, you know, having the WikiLeaks emails in the intelligence community, having the WikiLeaks emails. A lot of things happened in May of 2016 when this story was released. It was when Judge Napolitano came out and said that, you know, the Russians had Hillary Clinton's emails. It was also when Guccifer was saying that he had hacked into the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton server. And it interested me because it is very strange for the United States to extradite somebody from another country in the middle of their sentence just so that they could then have them cop a plea deal and ship him back over to Romania to finish his sentence.
It's almost as if our nonsense is more important than everybody else's. You have your legal proceedings in whatever country that you reside in go on pause so the United States can clean up their mess.
On March 31st, he's extradited 3,700 miles from Romania to meet with FBI officials and be charged. Again, very strange. Yeah. The court docs for Guccifer 1 are dated in April of 2016. So you've got a couple weeks where he's in custody and he's talking. This is even reflected inside of the struck page text messages. Bill Priestep is stressed out because Fox is about to do a report. And the report is titled Romanian Hacker. I breached Clinton server. It was easy. Now, who is the one in charge of this investigation into Guccifer? Who's dealing with Guccifer and who's getting Guccifer to cop a plea deal?
This I don't know.
Dana Puente.
Ah.
Now, everybody, you know, there's like this contentious thing about, hey, whether he's a good guy, he's a bad guy, whatever. But during when all this stuff is happening, I know this is really, it's a very confusing story. But during when all this is happening is when I'm emailing this to myself so we can play the clip right now. It's when Judge Napolitano goes on Fox News and talks about how Russia may release damaging material on Clinton May 9th, 2016, in the midst of all this, talking about, I'm going to play it for you because it's important, and I'm going to get to the point in a second, because there is a point, believe it or not. Here we go. You want to hear it?
Oh, please, because I am confused.
Ask me questions when you're done, because it is confusing and I'm probably not doing a good job.
No, no, you're doing a fine job. It's just, it's, I haven't even thought about this section of the story in a while, and it's just names and everything. So I hope I get some questions that pop up in my head.
Yeah, I'm just going to round it up really quickly. In the midst of the whole mid-year exam investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails and all that stuff, and how, if her server was accessed and who had access to it, and the conflicting reports from the attorney, the internal inspector general for the intelligence community, saying that yes, there were foreign actors that hacked into her server, and all of that going on, they take the man who has proclaimed that he has hacked into her server and how easy it was, and they extradite him from Romania to the United States of America, make him cop a plea deal, send him back over there once he cops his plea deal to finish his sentence in Romania. And while all of this is going on, and there's more information that I'll share after, but while all of this is going on, we have Judge Napolitano saying this.
To migrate her secret emails from a government server to a non-secure personal server. Her IT specialist, they can't find his emails. And at the same time, we learned there's a debate going on in the Kremlin between the foreign ministry and the intelligence services about whether or not they should release the 20,000 of Mrs. Clinton's emails that they have hacked into and received and stored. All of this is happening at once.
Oh, boy.
To migrate...
This was in, this was back in March, I believe, of 2016. Hold on, let me just make sure I have the date. May 9th, May of 2016. That's what Judge Knapp says in May. And then right after that, he's kicked off of Fox News. Remember?
I do. This is confusing the hell out of me.
It is. It's really, I'm sorry. If you're confused, everyone else is confused too. So Dana Bonte has Guccifer over here, the original Guccifer, the one who hacked into Sidney Blumenthal, found his emails that blew Benghazi out of the water and the Clinton emails.
And what was he on? Guccifer, the first Guccifer? What intentions was he acting with? Is it just on his own accord? Is he a lone wolf in this scenario? Is he acting on behalf of somebody? Have we gotten that far?
He was a lone wolf who hated the Illuminati and globalization. He was like a patriot, sort of like what you would call a patriot, trying to expose the misdeeds of the, the shady underbelly of government.
And what is his relationship, if any, to Kim.com?
There was never any documented relationship.
Okay. All right.
There was never any documented relationship between him and Kim.com, him and WikiLeaks, nothing like that. He was just able to go in there and say that, I guess I got right in there to her server. It was really easy to do. So he comes here, he cops a plea. They send him back when he's on his way out a few months later. He's sentenced on, he's sent back to Romania to finish his prison sentence there, right? And he says, while he's on his way out, I actually never hacked into her server. I was lying, and I'm cooperating with the FBI. So they bring him here. He proclaims how easy it was to get into Clinton's server. He's on his way out, and he says, nope, I didn't do any of that stuff. It was a big lie, and I'm working with the FBI. See you later. Not even a month later, Guccifer 2 pops up.
And this is a completely different person.
This is a completely different person who also hides themselves behind a, quote, Russian proxy, but they're saying is actually Russian. He speaks with a Romanian accent. In language analysis done of Guccifer 2 and the way he wrote on his website and stuff like that, it's Romanian in nature. It's almost like a clone of Guccifer 1, but Guccifer 1's in jail. So at the time, I'm like, did they bring this other guy here to farm his language, figure out how he talks, find out what he did and copycat it?
Well, what is the my question would be now that we are looking at this in hindsight, what is the actual purpose of Guccifer 2? What was he pushing particular, and what does it have to do in relation with Guccifer 1? So what is the use of not only the media but the power structure for Guccifer 2's emergence? How was he used?
Well, Guccifer 2 is the fake hacker that was used to hack that was blamed for the hack of the DNC and for the phishing on, well, no, just blamed for the hack of the DNC, not the Podesta okay. stuff. Now,
so then that's it. So then as far as the whole official story of Russia hacked the DNC, passed it off to WikiLeaks, which then disseminated it to the world, the person who actually did the hacking was this supposed Guccifer 2.
Yes. And the thing is that it's, you know, if we go by Guccifer 2 being the cover for all of this, where indictments have flowed from this. The GRU indictments and all of that is supposedly they were behind Guccifer 2, right? But if you needed a cover to be able to blame this on, if, like, let's say somebody's leaking stuff from the DNC, right? And they're leaking emails and they grabbed them. And the government doesn't know, and the DNC doesn't know, and the FBI doesn't know who it is doing the leaking, but they know that there's a leaker. And they don't want to, like, they want to put a lid on all that, right? They create Guccifer 2 and they give documents to Guccifer 2 that they know have already been grabbed in the leak. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, but has this been confirmed in some way?
Is just my meandering mind.
Right. Well listen, I know that kind of stuff happens all the time. The it's almost pretty much this is not exactly entrapment, but this the FBI and law enforcement have made it a pretty lucrative business, especially to keep their counterintelligence or counterterrorism budgets alive and well and robust, to make sure that people have certain ideas, certain ideas seeded in their heads, give them opportunities to plan something, give them fake bombs, and then, of course, make the bust at the end. This is a little bit of a different approach, but still a fabrication. And but I can see how that can be very easy to pull off if it's actually a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, all they need to do is use their Vault 7 tools to make it appear as though, like, all the stuff we know about why Guccifer is not a real thing. Take all of that and just make it the government created Guccifer after spending 6 weeks, 7 weeks farming information out of the first Guccifer.
So how is this getting relevant again? What has popped up in the news that we have to circle back around to this?
That's a great question, and I'll tell you right now. The drops from Friday, the new release of the Hillary Clinton files. You know what came out on Friday? There was another release of in the vault of Hillary Clinton information.
What came out?
It was a whole bunch of stuff. I have it in my thing here. Hold on. It was a whole bunch of stuff that came out. Where is he? Here we go. The FBI concluded that Clinton was in violation of basic server security, discussed the possibility that all of her emails were stolen, found that she stripped classification at the highest possible level. Sidney Blumenthal attempted to leverage his relationship with her to get her to hand over classified intelligence that contained a roadmap to a $30 billion fortune. And also in there is information about how Guccifer hacked into the Clinton server.
The first one.
Yes.
You see, now that you read that back, I remember seeing things about that. I forget which part in particular, but I think I have some things bookmarked to get through today.
And this is what happens when I talk about a story before I'm completely done with it, because it gets a little confusing even for me, because there are so many converging timelines here, Frank. Like, there's the story about how the heck James Comey knew that Loretta Lynch was talking to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, what we covered on last week's show about how Jim Comey announced the Clinton email, you know, exoneration because he was worried that the email that he read where Loretta Lynch was saying they were taking it easy on the investigation would get out and it would appear as though they were politically motivated. Mm. Now, he had that in March of 2016. That email was from the DNC. It was from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. A large portion of the DNC emails that were released were hers. So I started saying, well, how the heck did he have these back in March? So I'm unraveling a ball of yarn here that just completely destroys the timeline that we all thought we had. And so it gets very kind of intricate, but basically there inside of this FOIA vault release was a document from Judicial Watch that explained in detail how Guccifer got into Hillary Clinton's personal server. It says, we found indications that Guccifer or a person acting on his behalf, this is the original one, did a secondary penetration of Mrs. Clinton's server on May 22nd, 2009. We confirmed that there was an anonymous server used by Guccifer in Russia to conduct the penetration, and therefore there's a high possibility that the Russian services that monitor these anonymous servers have a copy. One file that was found on Clinton's server was not found on the Blumenthal server, and it was found on the deep web, and it was a serious targeting document that was created it was a document of serious national security implications. We'll just put it that way. That was found on the dark web that is purported to have come from when the first Guccifer got into Clinton's server. Because remember, he got into Blumenthal, and because of Blumenthal had access to Clinton's email address on her homebrew server.
Okay.
Now he denies that this ever happened when he cops a plea deal and says that he's cooperating with the FBI. Is it making like a little more sense why it's important?
Yeah. Yeah. It's starting to develop for me a little bit more. It's still very confusing.
22 minutes into the podcast. I swear. I hope I'm not ruining the show. I really do.
Listen, if this is important stuff, I mean, I'm going to have to try to iron it out. I'm just sorry that I couldn't be a little bit more of a articulate co-host find the right questions to ask.
I want to apologize to everyone out there if you've tuned me out already. I feel like this is a really important story, and I'm just not doing a good job of explaining it, and I'll take the lumps for it. Listen, the bottom line is this morning in my search, I found that Guccifer was released from his, you know, he was given like early release from his Romanian sentence. And unbeknownst to anyone but two small little tiny outlets that I could find, he was extradited here to the United States in November of 2018. So he's here right now and nobody reported it.
So we're just finding out that he's been here since last November right now.
Well, I just found it this morning. And
how'd you find it?
In Pacer, his case was updated to have his extradition and his custody papers and all that.
Who's handling him, though? Is this a good sign or is this a suppressive sign?
I don't know, but he's serving a concurrent 52-month sentence.
A sentence passed down to him from American courts?
Yes. He pled guilty, so yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had to pay $1,200 in restitution.
Oh, damn. How the hell does that even match up?
I don't know.
If the monetary fine is $1,200, why are you in jail for more than 2 years? I mean, come on.
But he's here. Goodness knows if they're tapping into him behind the scenes.
I wonder if he's got like one of those really not, like, you know, just an ankle bracelet in a loft somewhere instead of a prison.
I don't know. But he's an important character. And the fact that Dana Bonte was the one who was handling his case just makes it, that's one of the reasons why, like, he was in the midst of the mid-year exam and handling Guccifer at the same time. It's just weird. The whole thing is weird, okay? It's just weird.
So then, I guess my question, a question I can come up with right now is, along what point in of this story was the Guccifer story reformatted or repurposed to be able to be used by the Clinton campaign, because obviously all of the friends that she has in the State Department, Blumenthal, Shearer, the only person that we haven't heard from out of that whole group so far in the story is Weiner. And that's where the whole second dossier popped up.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point did they say, okay, this Guccifer guy who's not tied into anybody, lone wolf hacker, whatever the hell it is, got all the access to Clinton emails and this and that. Where along that timeline was that used? Obviously, they couldn't suppress it. They had to use it in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. There's a lot of intersectioning, like ribbons. So like I picture like a ponytail and there's like 17 ribbons I need to braid together somehow to present this to people so they don't zone out and fog out and not get what I'm talking about. And I have to find that piece that you're talking about right now. But it's there. I'll tell you that right now. I know it's there. I just have to find it.
Yeah.
I've been quiet because of that.
That's the only thing that would interest me at this point is to see, all right, well, if you're on the Clinton side of things and you know that this information has been obtained by someone, how do you – obviously the stuff that has been obtained and all of your – at home activities are highly illegal. So it's just like the overall story in the media and how the DNC hack or the leak played out in the media. Do not talk about what's actually in those emails. Don't talk about what's in this disclosure. Talk about how it was gotten, by whom, and you know, and then from there turn that into the scandal. So that's where I'm interested in finding out a little bit more. At what point does this, as you know, as you pointed out here, a wholly unconnected Guccifer character, how was he crafted into an international man of mystery with ties to the Kremlin, the ties to this and that? And then, of course, here we are at the tail end of a 2+ year investigation into Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's just you think about the complete diversionary tactic. The fact that we're sitting here talking about Robert Mueller and we're just so far off from the mark. These people are so gross as far as how they can throw off scents and what they're willing to do to cover tracks.
It's
like following a treasure map.
It really is being
100 paces off from the mark.
You want to know the most interesting part of it, though, to be honest? In May, when he's on television, Guccifer, they're talking about the story in May. Same time as Knapp is saying the Russians have the emails and all that. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are texting one another about Guccifer. Have no idea who he is. Don't know who he is. Don't know what he's done. Has no idea. They make comments about Romanians being like crooked like the Russians with the entitledness of the Italians. They don't know what the heck is going on. They have no idea who Guccifer is. And they're talking to one another. So that part of it to me was always like, let me scratch my head here. I just don't get it. How do they not know? This is like national reporting. And they're talking about how they hacked into the Clinton email server. Major news outlets are talking about it. And these guys don't know who he is. Very strange.
What that looks to me, I guess the most obvious thing is we got to get ahead of this real quick. The media got their breadcrumbs. The media got their questions to ask in public. The media got the order to lay down the foundation for something that could be a strong platform, a launching pad for what will be some sort of a play in the future or in the near future right there. And while the media was doing their diversionary nonsense, the investigators were asking all the questions, the very basic questions they didn't have answers for, but they gave answers. They gave answers to the media to throw us a bone, and still they don't know anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I could see that. But also, like, they're talking to one another. You know what I'm saying? So, like, they don't know that anyone's ever going to have these text messages. These are, like, right. Their private messages. You think right. That they were just putting, like, on a facade?
No. What I'm saying is that in having these private messages, you're actually able to see that while the media was laying down a foundation, it really was only just something, a bone to throw the public, because the people who are supposed to be on the front lines of these investigations and know, and asking these questions and getting the answers, they had no idea.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I see it. I understand now.
So, you know, I guess the play is to always let the public know that you know what it is. And people like Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, I guess their greatest obstacle at that point is we need to find information just so that when we craft the rest of the story, we are not hurt by some kind of a disclosure that comes out down the road that we didn't plan for.
Crazy. Frank,
it's the only thing I can come up with.
I think you're on point, to be honest.
Which just goes to show once again, because it was the biggest disclosure in all the DNC leaks, is that the press is just puppet state.
Yes.
There's nothing that they are sock puppets. There's nothing going on there. I mean, it would fall hand in glove in what we've already learned about the world at large through those leaks.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hacks, just like they said. They're hacks. I didn't even plan for this, Frank, believe it or not, at all, to be in the show at all. I just was thinking about it and I'm like, let me just spew out of my mouth what I'm thinking and I'll never do that again.
well, hey, we came around to a point.
Yeah, we did eventually. This is how my brain works. It's bad. Like, I'm never doing that again. I learned a very serious lesson today. Maybe somebody got something out of it, right?
Anyway. I'm sure somebody did. To be honest, taking whether or not I understand something as the...
Don't do that.
No, taking whether or not I understand something as the benchmark of whether or not the audience did is... that's not even something you should rely on.
Don't do that. You're so smart.
It's a lot of people are reasonably intelligent. It doesn't matter. You know, for example, you put me on the spot to do basic math to calculate what 20% would be for a tip. I start drooling sometimes. So it just doesn't. None of that matters.
Okay, fair enough.
This is complex stuff.
It is, and I'm. It is. I want to move on, though, because I'm sure people are like, all right, Tracy, enough already. Shut your mouth. Ready?
Yes.
Christy Swanson says, I'm so excited to report the rehearsals have been incredible. Such an amazing group of talented people. It's coming together and it's filled with so much humor. You'll love it. It's called FBI Lovebirds Undercovers. Christy Swanson and Dean Cain play Lisa Page and Peter Strzok in a sort of Washington, D.C. production this Thursday, where they read they act out the Strzok Page text messages interlaced with their testimony in front of the committees to tell a story of Russian collusion.
Is this a porno?
No. Well, maybe. Okay. It depends on what kind of...
kind of stories?
No, they're going to tell the story of Spygate, like, and the horrible story of Spygate, but using the Lisa Page and Peter Strzok's own words.
You know, did you ever see that half hour reenactment of video? It's really well done on YouTube. I forgot who put it out there, but it's about a half hour. They cast two actors, one to play Peter Strzok, one to play Lisa Page, and they actually enacted all of the text messages that we have.
No.
Right down to the final text message where Lisa says, don't contact me anymore.
No, I've never seen it, but now I can't believe
you've got to. It's a half hour. All of the available text messages that were out there, I think that they put this out around the end of last summer or something like that. And they got really good. I mean, they did pretty well with the casting and I enjoyed it. I didn't watch the whole half hour. I skipped around, but it was fantastic.
Don't text me ever again.
Exactly. That's how it ended. They go all the way to the end. But now you're pretty much saying that they're bringing this to stage.
Bringing it to stage, and they're doing it with also the testimony before the committees.
Wow.
So
that's
it,
a good chapter.
It should be. I want to see it. I'm done today. Put a fork in me. Frank, help. Help me.
Monday.
Help me.
Oh, gosh.
My brain is not working. Or it's working too much. This is a problem. They did an Indiegogo.
Who's doing Indiegogo? Who did? Chrissy Swanson?
No, the director. He did an Indiegogo. His name is Phelim McAleer.
Okay.
He raised $97,043 to put it on.
And what theater is this gonna be at?
They canceled it. They found out at the first place where it was gonna be, that what it was going to be, and they kicked them out and they found a new venue. I almost want to start the whole thing over.
The whole show.
I want to start it all over. Can't.
Well, I mean,
I'm sweating over here. What is wrong with me today?
I don't know. Hey, I mean, I don't know. If you feel that badly about it, we could always start over and just do a half hour special. Just say we had a lot of technical difficulties.
I'm so excited to report. Rehearsals have been incredible. Such an amazing group of talented people, and it's coming together. They don't say where it is.
I know where it's going to be. It's going to be in that theater that the Ruth Bader Ginsburg play was on.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Which was really just a memorial service. Hey, have you actually seen her? You know what I feel like? I feel like every 3 to 4 months or so, somebody throws us a still image of her in a synagogue somewhere. And it makes everybody satisfied enough to not ask questions for another 4 months.
She came out with a statement about how great Brett Kavanaugh is with hiring women, that for the first time now, the law office or the clerk's office is staffed with like 90% women. And it was all a credit to Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine that, all the stupid idiots who are clawing at the front doors of the Supreme Court, like they were being locked inside of a place trying to get out. And so the zombie scenes, the zombie apocalypse scene outside the Supreme Court during that whole fiasco. And here he is. My God.
Yeah. Well, somebody that I know that I won't name said that's because he is like that with women. That's why he hires so many.
Yeah. He hires all the women so he can have his pick.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny, right? All right. Next. I went searching, Frank, over the weekend for the clip of that press conference we talked about where on 1/13, 2017, the Obama administration gave a press conference saying that what Flynn did was just completely normal.
Yep.
And I found the clip. Do you want to hear it or do we skip playing it because everybody already knows?
No, I think it's great to come back around to remind everybody, because if we're going to get to a real conclusion to Flynn soon, after all of the delayed sentencing and after, you know, all the disclosures coming out and now the Mueller report is out, we can see how disingenuous so many lines of reasoning and lines of attack have been. It's good to just refresh people of how open the Obama State Department was about how he did nothing wrong, and that if he actually wanted to talk to Kislyak or anybody else, they would have been happy to pretty much go and set it up.
Exactly.
That's the 17th, you said?
It's 1/13 of 2017.
So 7 days later is the inauguration. 3 days after that, 10 days later, is Flynn's initial conversation with the FBI, in which they say that he wasn't trying to deceive them at all. And then the next day, the 24th, was I remember there was the FBI say nothing's wrong here on the 23rd, and then the 24th is when Peter Strzok shows up.
Oh, good question. What day does he, that would, it would be the 302.
It was back to back days. I remember it was 23rd and 24th.
I think you're correct. I really do. And you know what? I don't remember dates as good as you do, but you are correct. It was back to back. So it had to have been right. It's a minute and 27 seconds long and you remembered it basically. Like if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have like remembered exactly what to look for. Because I didn't know that it was the last press conference, but it was. And here we go.
It's the most hilarious thing. Because remember, everybody, this what you're about to hear right now, what they're saying was completely fine, is the reason why they said. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, so Flynn got removed, and now he's facing sentencing for apparently lying. Days later. You're talking about lying.
Well,
10 days later about what the State Department said that they would have set up for him.
Not only that, but like at the time when this happened, I did a thread that got a ton of traction. It was called like General Flynn took a plea to save the country. And I said in there, basically, like he knew that they were reporting that he had spoken to Ambassador Kislyak. So why would he lie about it? It didn't make any sense.
No sense whatsoever, but play it, please.
Okay.
By the way, who's the one that's actually doing the press conference? Because it was a stand-in that day.
No, was it?
Yeah. What's his name?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. I don't know his name.
Okay.
I don't know. But here we go.
Contact.
I don't know who the reporter is either. It doesn't really matter.
You probably have seen reports starting yesterday, but then more of them this morning about contact between the incoming national security advisor and the Russian ambassador. I'm just wondering, from the State Department's point of view, is this something that's of concern at all? Or I'll just leave it there and then follow up.
Again, not necessarily. I've seen the reports. I don't think they've been confirmed or corroborated yet. He's part of the transition team. That's really for them to speak to and how they are engaging. I mean, the president-elect is also engaged on his own with many world leaders.
Right.
I don't want to speculate, and I don't want to.
There's nothing. This building doesn't see anything necessarily inappropriate about contact between members of the incoming administration and foreign officials, no matter what country they're from.
No.
Right?
No. And again, this has been ongoing. I mean, we stand ready if they want to work through the State Department to contact some of these individuals. But we have no comment or no problem with them doing such on their own. Yep.
Investigate now!
It's criminal! It's criminal, I say!
I mean, really? Like, how fast do people forget or pretend not to remember?
Memory, everything's got to go down the memory hole. Everything has to be stuffed down the memory hole. It's like Vito Corleone after he kills the White Hat. And he's on the rooftops and he's taking apart the gun and just putting little pieces of the gun in every chimney he can find. That's just it.
I had this weird image in my head of like Santa Claus hopping from chimney to chimney, dropping gun parts down.
That's it.
That's what it felt like when you were explaining it.
See? Well, that's pretty much the extent of it, Tracy. I can't believe that. I always said, does anybody see this? And then you think, you know, when he said incoming national security advisor, it also just makes me lament what the deep state was able to accomplish, who they were actually able to damage, what they were able to slow down. Can you imagine what I don't even know what would have been the approach in the world? What could have been done if Michael Flynn, for these last 3 years,
was able to actually do his job,
and put forth his vision for what needed to be changed at home and abroad, with what he knows, with the mistakes he saw, be committed, how he wanted to clean it up. The fact that he's had to spend the last 3 years not even talking in public because he had to clean up this mess in his private life. I mean, that's just the thing that kills me the most. I want to know what the last 3 years would have been if he was implementing his plan.
I know. Maybe if there's a second term, he'll be able to do what he was going to do the first time around.
He should be vice president second time around.
That'd be great.
Actually, that would be useless. No. National Security Advisor is a lot more important than vice president.
That's why we have Pence. Anyway, so the next thing that I wanted to talk about was the Maria Bartiromo interview yesterday with she had Carter Page and Mark Meadows on. Mark Meadows went on and announced that we're going to be getting documents this week, declassified documents, and sort of alluded to the fact that it may be the transcripts that the FBI has of Papadopoulos meeting with Alexander Towner.
Oh.
That's all. No biggie.
I'm happy.
I mean, and we learned. Now, I got people coming after me for this. Some. I never knew, and I don't think it was very well reported anywhere, that Carter Page, not that he worked with the CIA, but that he worked with the CIA for decades. Did you?
No.
Okay.
No.
So Carter Page on Maria Bartiromo said he worked with the CIA for decades. And I said, wow, that's important. Because if you think about it, he worked with both the FBI and the CIA as an informant, right? Mm-hmm. They got a FISA warrant on a government and an informant working for the CIA and the FBI. Now, to me, think about who had access to what was found in that FISA warrant search, and was any of that information, if not handled correctly, dangerous to our security as a nation?
And was it hidden?
And did he know that he had a FISA warrant on him? Because it's just weird, Frank. I can't square. Like, for people that always go around saying how they don't want to burn sources, right? We don't want to burn our intelligence sources. We don't want to burn these people. They've literally now outed themselves, not the Trump administration, the people that had been working with these folks. Like, five or six of them. Kilimnik, Halper, Downer, Page. Who else was the Sater? They've burned all these people.
There's no one left. There's no one left. And there's very few. I mean,
that we know
first of all,
Mifsud.
At this point, even having all these people and all these people discredited is what are you going to do?
But think about what lengths they went to cover their own asses, that they burnt all of these decade long sources that they'd built relationships with.
It makes you wonder who's going to want to get into business with the United States government after this.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, who the hell's going to want to work with the intelligence community if you know that there's a great chance one day you're going to get flushed unless you have some of this great insulating blackmail evidence that everybody else seems to have? You know, as far as Carter Page goes, here I go thinking, wow. He stopped working with the FBI in spring of 2016,
right?
And they're using him as a fall guy later on that very year. I didn't even, and that's just from one small project of working against that Russian financial crimes ring or whatever the hell it was in New York. To add on top of that, many years of working with the Central Intelligence Agency, man.
Can you picture right now in your head this movie plot? Ready? Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort, and crew get together after they realize they're being outed and used as scapegoats, like you say, as patsies. They get together to plot a way to burn it all down. And here we are.
That's it.
because like it's not unbelievable. It's the same way that in my head over the weekend, I was trying to think about why are we learning that Hillary Clinton's brother died from Hillary Clinton and that's it. There's no reporting on it, like at all, that he was sick, that he was injured, that something happened to him, that he was, you know, it's just very strange to hear from her. My brother died yesterday, by the way, and he was such a huge component of all their businesses. And it wasn't just some random brother that stayed out of the way. He was a big problem for the Clintons for many years. So in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like in like, I forget the name of the series it was where basically it was like a family on Long Island and this woman comes in and infiltrates the family and exposes their secrets scandal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking did she plot her own brother's murder?
I don't know.
Would it be outside of the realm of possibility?
Oh no, absolutely not. I think every play is on the table right now. And there's been such a weird cluster of deaths.
Yeah.
Very strange. And I know at this point there are some that, you know, have been confirmed that they're just isolated tragic incidents. Not everything should be looked under, you know, with a suspicious eye, but at the same time there are some very suspicious things that are going on.
Well, it's all these former politicians that are dying and like high-ranking, you know, law enforcement officials, and like it's just very strange. I mean, is it possible that this could all be just happening now, unrelated to one another? Of course. It's just weird. And anyway, like, you know, they make movies that act out plots like this. Why not in real life? Why not?
I know. Why not? House of Cards. I think everybody should watch the first two or three seasons of House of Cards. In preparation for the rest of the year.
I'm a little bit upset, Frank.
Why?
Because the New York Times released a piece over the weekend, The Making of a YouTube Radical, and there's all kinds of like thumbnails of people on the cover that have radicalized these people. Like this guy comes out and says, I was radicalized by YouTube and these are the creators that did it, and I'm not there.
I saw that. And you're not on there?
No.
Yeah, well.
Not radicalizing people.
I guess that's good. I guess that you have some time. You have some time to help wake people up before, of course, you're spotted.
Yeah, you're not on there either. Just to let you know.
Well, nobody knows I exist. So
that's not true. That's not true. You want to know something? I just saw yesterday a post that had quite a lot of traction. I don't remember who did it. I was going to send you a copy of it, actually, where they asked, like, where do you get your news from? What's your favorite podcast? Blah, blah, blah. And there were like 12 or 13 responses that named you.
Oh, wow.
And like one that named me.
Well, that's something.
Yeah. Don't doubt yourself. You're out there helping.
I'm out there all right.
But on there was Philip DeFranco on this cover. Do you know who Philip DeFranco is?
Yeah, I do. And you know what? I met him once at VidCon in 2016 when we went out there and me and the band helped. We performed with Anthony at VidCon. And so we were all in close quarters and all that stuff. And he's a nice guy. He really is a nice guy. But I'll tell you, I'm happy he got sucked into this because one of those fence sitters, and I'm glad that he got sucked into this so he can see how bad it's getting.
Yeah, you're right. He is a fence sitter. He sits on the fence and he talks about some of the ideas and things that he said on his own private thing outside of his quote news show. Is really leaning left and anti-Trump, which is fine, but it's never the truth. That's the problem. Yeah. So like knowing that that's his bent and that's the kind of lens he looks at things from, he was super offended that he was lumped in with like the likes of like Milo and Stefan Molyneux and Alex Jones and who else? Lauren Southern and, you know, who else is on here? That's about it. Really, there's a few more others on there, but he was upset about that. Like, what the hell? I'm not like this. No, that's not why you should be upset, Philip DeFranco. That's not why you should be upset. You shouldn't be upset that you're not like this. You should be upset that they're doing this at all.
Yeah, you should also be asking the question, what is like this?
Exactly.
What is like that? What are these people? I mean, is this actually a thing? Or what exactly is this? What are these things that people are getting banned for? Is it really what people say it is? I mean...
It actually, too, like on the list of things that radicalized this guy to the right. And of course, the person they're writing the story about has now gone completely to the left, realizing the error of his ways and ever thinking that the right was a good place to be. Yeah. Right.
That never happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And then everybody on the bus clapped at the end.
Yeah. Well, he said Milton Friedman.
What? What about Milton Friedman?
He was a radical. Alt-right figure that radicalized him into thinking that.
Yeah, you know, he was a radical alt-right figure that was able to stand in front of large groups of people throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s and have the most passionate, friendly, genial conversations filled with history and good economics. And it calmed people down. It calmed people down to go up there thinking that, the free market was, oppressive in some way, or that the only way to fix the ails of the world is through centralizing government. And for him to Milton Friedman to stand there and talk so eloquently to people in such a kind, compassionate way and actually take these issues head on. I mean, that's what we're lacking.
Dangerous.
Today.
It's dangerous, Frank. It needs to be stopped.
Yeah. No, it's Milton Friedman, he would be barred from college campuses. And why? Because in an hour long seminar or a Q&A session, he'd be doing more for the intellectual integrity of the entire campus than their teachers and their staff do all year.
We can't have that. Listen to this. The right-wing content Mr. Kane viewed in 2015 and 16 often consisted of videos by Stefan Molyneux with titles like Social Justice Warriors Always Lie and The Global Warming Hoax. Mr. Kane also watched many videos by members of the so-called intellectual dark web, like the popular comedian Joe Rogan and the political commentator Dave Rubin.
Wait a second. Joe Rogan is part of the intellectual dark web.
Where are we going?
The guy that sits there and, plays footsie with Jack Dorsey.
Yes. So Dave Rubin made a post and he said, "Hey, everyone, how was your weekend? As for mine, the New York Times rams libelous story, including a picture of me implying I help radicalize people to the alt-right. Also, we made some amazing burgers and took Emma for plenty of long walks. What about you?"
Yeah, but it's really just a split.
They're destroying themselves. And I love it. I'm watching it with glee. Keep doing this. Keep doing it. Because if you get a Philip DeFranco to open his eyes and be like, "Oh my God, what is happening?" It's over. You know how many middle of the road people that man talks to on YouTube on a daily basis?
Well, we will see if it opens his eyes or not. We'll see if it opens his eyes or not, because people are so scared of losing any of their influence on social media that if they actually do get caught up in something that should smack them in the face and say, "Wow, this is actually turning out wrong. And if they're wrong about me, then who am I wrong about on this list?" It's one of those things. You would think so, but people are so scared of losing their influence and losing what they've built that many will be inclined to say, "Okay, this isn't right. I really appreciate the effort that YouTube is taking to combat radical thought and extremism on the right. But I mean, they got to do a better job because I'm not." No, idiot. No, you idiot. The approach itself is what's wrong.
But a fantastic Tuesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it.
That's every single video.
"Hello, you beautiful bastards, and I'm Phil DeFranco with my plush hair."
This is the kind of content that needs to be on YouTube, like what you just did. That discussion needs to be there, and you don't get a chance.
Nope. I won't. I mean, I'm not going to stop. It'll
we need
happen.
More of you. We need to clone you. You're such an important voice on especially culture. Like, I wish we could clone you and pepper you around the internet like Salt Bay.
However it's going to happen, it'll happen. I mean, I'm not going to, I won't be stopping anytime soon.
I wonder if we can get you on David Rubin's show. Would you do an interview with Dave Rubin?
Yeah, why not? Dave Rubin's, he's got a big platform.
Mm-hmm.
That would be
funny.
That'd be helpful.
It would be helpful.
He's gay, and I've got a lot of gay people in my life, and it could be like this thing where it's like, hey, man, we've got all this gayness around us.
Let me tell you something. I had no idea Dave Rubin was gay until the other day when he was talking to Crowder.
Yeah, and you, that's the thing. Nobody cares. I mean, it's just nobody cares. And that's what we would, a lot of people on, you know, most people who consider themselves outside that whole progressive bubble, just try to tell people, hey, you know, that whole world that you wanted to create where people are tolerant of the way that individuals live their lives and don't really care, that actually exists. It actually exists. You actually didn't give yourself over to it. Us over here that you're labeling as extremists don't care how you live.
Yeah.
We don't pay it any mind.
I mean, obviously had no, I was
Tracy, I was reading this this story. Where the hell is it? I was reading this story. There was a gay pride march somewhere in I don't know, maybe it was Detroit or something, and it was, hold on, I think I have it ready for tonight's show. Let me see if I can
I just want to say while you're trying to find it that I didn't mean to start playing that Philip DeFranco clip right when I did.
Oh, okay.
I accidentally hit the play button because it's Monday and I am suffering greatly.
Listen to this. This is from the Daily Mail. White supremacist appears. They say singular, appears to urinate on an Israeli flag as nationalist group interrupts an LGBT celebration in Detroit by tearing apart pride flags and giving Nazi salutes. What?
I'm so confused.
So pretty much four idiots with swastika armbands show up to this pride march where there's just hundreds, there's just seas, roving masses of people that are there for this gay pride stuff. And I don't know which side is the bigger joke.
Yeah, I mean, and you also don't know if those people actually were Nazis or if they were just plants to make it look like they were.
Even if they were, it's so amazing to see this. What is it? They talk about how it's one of the more prominent neo-Nazi groups in the country, and I said prominent. There's five pictures of these guys. It's the same four faces in every picture. I'm like, if this is the most prominent neo-Nazi group in the country, we're in great shape. They disrupted it. These four people disrupted the lives of hundreds.
Can we organize a straight pride parade?
Boston's doing that, isn't it?
Oh, they are?
Yeah, and Milo Yiannopoulos is going to be one of the chairmen of it. Oh, I saw that.
We're so witty. We're so witty and funny and hip, aren't we?
It's easy to be funny when you don't have the rules.
Yeah.
It's easy to be funny when you don't have the rules and it's like we're living out the plot of Batman, only we're the Joker. The Joker has no rules. Batman has all these rules, and Joker always plays against them. Only thing is that in our storyline, Joker's the good guy. It's hilarious.
Isn't it weird how the universe has like kind of shifted around?
Oh yeah,
it's very strange. I have to say it's the end of the show, and I used the first half hour to talk about a story that wasn't ready, and then I bumbled every word that tried to. But you guys, I think you might like the show. So I hope you did. And Frank, what do you think about today's show?
I think it was fun. Listen, you're going hard on yourself, but I think that based on what was disclosed over the weekend, it would be really good if people got that background. And it's a sticky, tangled background because
we never get the truth from anyone and we're forced to dig through thousands of media articles and government documents to find it ourselves.
And not only that, but the whole Guccifer thing is an important part of the story, even if it's an important part of the false story. It's the story that we're still trying to untangle ourselves from. So and to be honest, with all the confusion of the earlier on in the show, mostly by me, that's probably the point of it all. Confuse the hell out of people.
You're right. I'm going to do a better job today and like get it all ready for everybody and put it out. And then, you know, maybe we'll quickly recap it Wednesday. How's that?
Fine by me.
Thank you for your time today, Frank. I know we had a little tech difficulty. Then we went a little long. Things are, you know, fluid.
No problem.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Technical Difficulties Val
and Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern on Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you Wednesday.
See you then.
This is a crush performance with Jeff Crichel Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
At the start of every season, we love to pick our teams to follow. We look at the storylines. We look at the players to watch because we try to learn from these top performers and these top organizations. We also like to learn about what's not working. There's so much to learn if you look at the top performers in your industry, regardless of what it is. Certainly sports, music. Look at the top bands or the top musicians, the top songwriters. They're doing something special. Look at the top businesses or corporations. They're incredibly special. To accomplish sustained success in this day and age is truly a feat. The playing fields are so competitive. So anytime we see an athlete, an individual athlete having success, or when we see a team or an organization continually competing year after year after year, or if we see a business or a school or anywhere that exceptional performance is going on, you can be guaranteed we're trying to figure it out.
Crush Performance with Jeff Crichel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.